You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers, and good afternoon to our overseas listeners, and good morning to Peter.
And
are you there?
Peter unfortunately has the sniffles.
Again.
Always.
Right. And we have our first guest already on the line. I've been dying to talk to Patsy Smith about her company, Gourmet Mustard and Chutney. Patsy, I'm not sure I understand this. How did you start this company?
It is kind of crazy. I started it, a love of food and a love of education. And I sort of combined them both to make Schoolhouse Kitchen.
The Schoolhouse Kitchen really refers to the fact that you started making it in your kitchen. And also, how does all this money go to education?
How does it go?
Yes. What? Explain to me about your education interests.
Okay. Well, what?
First of all, let's start with the mustard. You started making it in your kitchen.
I started maybe 30 years ago, and I was making it for charities. The recipe had been given to me to use only for fundraising and charitable purposes or my personal gift list. So I used to do it for hospitals, and the competition got so great for bidding on this that it became quite a thing. And then I had friends that would pay me $100 a jar for this.
$100?
$100 because they could only get it from me.
That's pretty good.
Which was great. I mean, and they would obviously do this for charity, you know, donate it to my favorite charities.
Now, that's brilliant. It's a great way to raise money.
Well, it was. And my children kept saying to me, Mom, you've got to do something about this. And I said, no, there are too many mustards on the market. We don't need one more. And finally, I think I got inspired to do this. I sit on the board of a girls' school in Massachusetts, which teaches leadership to women and financial literacy and all the things we need to know. I decided that in the last few years that Americans really listen more to sound bites. They're not intellectually curious. So I decided that I would raise money for schools that I thought would do a good job or charities that I thought would help educate our population, because I think you need to be educated at a very early age.
Right.
Otherwise, you finish up so far behind, you never catch up.
Well, yeah. We can do a good job later on, but the best job is done early on. I decided that I would go forward with this project, and I luckily happen to have a son who's an industrial designer in California, so he helped me, and actually all my children helped me with the design of my products, with the taste of my products.
And so is it not the original recipe then?
Well, of course, it is the original recipe, but when you have to do it for production, you do need to change a little bit. And all of my products are natural, with no preservatives or additives, and that's the way I want it to be.
Is it a secret where you got the recipe from, or can you share that with us?
Well, it was a friend in California, actually. Everything seems to be going back to California, but her name is Betsy Dingwell, and she had been making it for charity also. So this was at least 30 years ago.
Now, what is it that makes the flavor so unusual?
Well, it starts with sort of a sweet, and then it turns a little hot and a bite. Now, have you had a chance to taste it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. In fact, I had some Thai curry chicken sausages from Whole Food Market the other day, and I used the mustard on it, and it was just terrific.
I'm so glad. You know, the funny thing is I find that I cannot eat other mustards now.
Oh, see.
I was at this wonderful place where I had a German dinner and bratwurst and the whole thing, and I really could not eat the mustard they gave me.
Oh, probably horseradish.
I've got to start carrying it around with me so I can have it.
Well, you should always have a jar in your purse anyway, shouldn't you?
I should. You're right.
So you launched this company. Now, you say it goes to education. Is it this one particular school?
No, that's just one of them. I have given, to the Boys and Girls Club of Northern Westchester County.
That's a good cause.
It is, and Petaluma Montessori Schools, the Ripplewam Siskiwa Schools, and Miss Hall School is the one that I sit on the board of.
Uh-huh.
And I've given
Which is in New England. Do you live in New England?
I live in upstate New York.
Oh, okay.
But this is in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Right.
And that I've given to Bassett Healthcare in Cooperstown.
Oh, sure. I know Bassett very well.
Do you really?
It's a very good health system.
It's incredible.
Yeah, they do a lot of innovative things, considering how far out in the country they are.
How did you get to know them?
Well, I do some work in healthcare.
Telemedicine. Okay. When did you start actually producing this?
Late 2004.
Okay.
And
so it's relatively new on the market?
Very new on the market. And actually, the good news is we're already on the Dean and DeLuca website right now.
Oh, no, that's good.
Just as of a couple of days ago.
Oh, no, that's wonderful.
Catalog.
That's really wonderful.
That's exciting.
Yes. You've added a product, your chutney, which we'd like to offer.
Chutney, and in about a month, I'm going to have a balsamic vinaigrette with no additives.
Really? Yeah. How are you going to make the balsamic?
Well, I have to cook it because they've told me, you know, to do a cold pack, you need something for fungus and you need something for bacteria. And I decided I wanted no additives, so I worked the recipe around to where it tasted good. It's just a basic balsamic vinaigrette, but I've cooked it so that I do not need additives.
Well, that's really amazing.
Now, are you still making these at home, or do you actually have somebody now actually fabricating them for you?
Oh, well, I do my testing at home. Mm-hmm. I have Nelson Farms, which is an incubator business at Mooresville State College in Mooresville, New York, do the processing for me. They are my co-packers.
That puts you in a position where you can produce a larger quantity, I guess.
Yes, it does, which is great.
How much do you make?
Quantities?
Yeah, quantity-wise, I mean, just in terms of jars. Don't think of it in terms of ounces or anything like that.
Oh, jars, wow. I don't have that answer right now, but
It's a lot.
It's a lot now. And this year I've increased my business over double.
You have gift packages, too.
Yeah, I do. And what I do, there are two of each in a gift pack. And what I will be doing when I introduce this vinaigrette, I will be doing a gift pack with vinaigrette and mustard and chutney.
Oh, wow. So now, are you getting really caught up in this merchandising now?
Yes. Since I'm the chief merchandiser.
Uh-huh.
You're the chief of everything, right?
I'm the chief of everything, and it's really taken a lot more time than I ever thought it would. At my age, to be starting something like this is kind of crazy, but it's been fun.
Tell me a little about your background. You weren't born to do this.
Well, no, probably not. I went to Miss Hall School and to Smith College.
Yeah.
And I grew up loving, we ate three meals a day in our home.
Uh-huh.
And I love to eat. And I moved to a small town where there are no good restaurants. So in order to learn to entertain, you really had to learn to cook. And I love to cook. And the funny thing is, I used to be so dessert-oriented.
Uh-huh.
That was the first thing I ever thought of. And then to have a company with condiments like this is really quite funny because it's a reversal of the thing that I loved when I started out. But I used to teach cooking here with a friend, and
I did
my classes very differently from most cooking classes. Most cooking classes will do a whole menu or something you can eat, but I did sauces, and we did breads, and we did desserts. We classified it that way very differently.
Uh-huh. So you're actually a culinary educator, but you're self-taught?
Well, I did take Peter... I took courses with Mary Risley, Peter Kum.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Not a whole lot of them, but just enough so I could learn a few new things. I'm constantly learning. And then there was Jean Morel, was a French teacher, and he had a little inn in Hillsdale, New York, and I went to him a couple of times. And it was just one of those things I just kept learning. And you would say I'm more self-taught than a lot of people.
But you've been doing this all along, or were you
all my life.
I see.
Yeah. And all my life.
How many kids did you have? You raised how many?
Five.
So I thought it just sounded to me like you probably living in a small town and cooking and making mustards and jams and whatever, that you probably had five kids.
Five children, right.
Yes, that's wonderful. So now, what do you think is going to happen next?
After my vinaigrette?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a couple of jams in the offing. I make jams all the time, and I've put together different combinations, and I have a couple that I have not seen anywhere on the market, and I'm not going to tell you what they are yet.
Okay.
But that's probably going to be it for a while.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure. Well, you probably have your hands full.
I want every product that I do got to be special.
Uh-huh.
You know, someone said to me, well, mustards. How many mustards are you going to have? I said one. I'm not just going to add dill to one, horseradish to another, and put them out there. I'm going to have one.
Yeah, can you characterize, is the one particular ingredient that makes Schoolhouse Kitchen mustard just so special? Can you give away a little bit of a secret as to what's in it?
Oh, well, it's on the jar, so that's no secret.
Oh, it's on the jar. Well, I didn't read the jar. I just...
Yeah, the ingredients are on the label. They have to be. But I think it's the way you prepare the mustard, you know, how hot it will be. And then there's a little sugar in it that gives it the sweetness.
Yeah, Bon Appetit magazine called it sweet, smooth, hot.
It is.
Or perhaps that's what you call it.
Yeah,
she calls it.
Oh, that's what you call it. So they just read it off the label.
Yeah, I think they did, but they must have tasted it also and liked
it. Oh, I think they certainly Laurie Glenn Buckle was the person who wrote the little piece about it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she wouldn't have featured it if she didn't really enjoy it.
No, that's true.
Now, back to the chutney. I'm the chutney lover in the family. Anne likes mustard, but being English, I'm into chutneys. A lot of Americans aren't. I think there's a lot of educating that needs to be done.
Yeah, it's true, because I was at a class at Oneana, to a business class. They wanted to know how I got started. And I asked people in each class if they knew what chutney was.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person in each class had heard of chutney. Which
no.
just floored me.
That's amazing.
Yeah. One was an Italian fellow, and the other had been to England.
I see.
Well, there you go. That's the answer.
I know.
No question about that.
But I must tell you, the other night, I made something that is not on my website yet.
Could you hold on to that, Patsy, because we need to take a commercial break, and then we'll come back. So we'll take a break.
Okay.
What can I say about Real Estate 101 in just 10 seconds? Not much, but in a whole hour? Now that's a different story. Join me, Phil Marcus, each Saturday afternoon at 1 here on Pittsburgh's Talk Radio, The Edge, AM 1550.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go. Fast.
Influenza is a serious disease.
Are you talking to me?
If you have asthma, diabetes, or other chronic medical conditions, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you're 50 or older, yes. If your child is between 6 and 23 months, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you live or work with those at high risk, yes. Influenza will kill as many as 36,000 people this year. It's that serious. Prevent influenza. Get immunized. A message from the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ann and Peter Haig on The Menu. Remember to check our website, onthemenuradio.com. And we have a crowd here right now. We're just finishing up a discussion with Patsy Smith about her gourmet mustard and chutneys. And Patsy was just giving us a nice combination. But we've also been joined by John Rowley and Bill Taylor of Taylor Shellfish Farms. Is that it?
That's correct.
Okay. Anyhow, so here we're all together. we're talking about this dish that was surprising to Patsy, and then she's going to give us some information about websites and stuff. Patsy, what was the dish you were telling us before?
Oh, I was just saying that I had a venison loin the other day, and I thought, well, now how am I going to do this? So what I did is I sautéed some wild mushrooms with garlic, salt, and pepper, reduced it, and then I added chut, and it was divine. And my husband said to me, this is the best venison I've ever had.
That's great.
Of course, he didn't know what I had done, but it was great.
Okay. Well, Patsy, you were telling us before that you are now handled by Dina DeLuca.
Yeah.
But give our listeners your website, just in case.
Okay, it's schoolhousekitchen.org.
Great. And once again, you're doing a great job with raising money for education. We really appreciate it.
Great. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, back from now from mustard to shellfish. John?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is John Rowley. Who's going to start this off, John? You or Bill Taylor, who's the owner of Taylor Shellfish Farms?
John, why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, what do you got for us, Ann?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, you...
The oysters are really good right now. We're right in...
the oysters are fabulous. Give us some idea of how people can latch onto the oyster shipments. I mean, we tested it out, and it actually works.
The Valentine's Day oysters?
Well, you have holiday. You do this anytime, don't you?
Well, we've for the holiday season, for Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, we put together a holiday oyster pack where you could get five species of oysters. Our native Olympia oyster, Kumamoto's, European flats, Virginica's, and Pacific oysters. In one package, so for somebody that eats oysters, it's just a terrific opportunity to taste all these species of oysters side by side, and people can get them either two dozen or four dozen.
And they come with a shucking knife and a instruction sheet and
instruction,
the story about oysters, and it's all boxed up and be ribboned. And now tomorrow will be the date by which. People, if they want this for Valentine's Day, have to order. They call where to get this? Tomorrow is going to be the 12th. And you said to order by the 12th for Valentine delivery.
Right, right.
So how do you order?
Well, you can go to the website, www.taylorshellfish.com, or you can call
426-6178.
Let's do that. Let's do that one more time for those people who are internet handicapped, so they need the telephone again.
360-426-6178.
Great. Now we practiced here, and I have to tell you with all honesty, John, that I had never before even attempted to shuck an oyster.
And he wouldn't even let me near them.
you sent us a wonderful pack of two dozen, and they didn't last 4 hours. We ate half of them at lunchtime, and we ate the other half before dinner.
And you opened them.
And I opened every single one. And the only one I had a little bit of trouble with was the European flats.
That's the hardest one.
The European flats, the shell is just a little brittle on the edges. So I found myself picking a few pieces of shell out of the oysters. I didn't lose any of the brine.
They were fabulous. I mean, what is it? I mean, it's just so fabulous, fresh. I mean, you're the poet of the oyster, John. Tell us about how fresh these are and what makes them so sublime.
Well, a lot of an oyster's flavor comes from the water that they're grown in, and this particular bay that most of those oysters are grown in is called Totten Inlet. It's in the south end of Puget Sound, and it's legendary for the food that lives in it. So these oysters have just this incredible diet. So they get very plump and perky, and they just have a really, you know, nice toothsome quality to them, and they're, as you found out, they're extremely flavorful.
Oh, they're just fabulous. They were just incredible.
Now, where is
that? I could eat them every day.
Where is that location compared to the body of water called the Hood Canal?
It's fairly close to Hood Canal, at least if you're driving. It's only about 20 miles by driving, but to go by water, you have to go up past Tacoma and Seattle and on up around the Kitsap Peninsula, and it's about around 100 miles or so if you go by water to get to Hood Canal.
If you're a seagull, it's just a short...
Yeah, there you go. No, I used to travel a lot to the Pacific Northwest, and my business would be done like in the early afternoon, and I wouldn't be going home until the red eye. So quite frequently, I would drive from Olympia, Washington. I would drive up one side of the Hood Canal, and then catch the ferry back over to the mainland, and ease my way down to SeaTac, and come home. And I would frequently stop at a great seafood restaurant called, I think it's called Three Fountains, which is right around the corner from SeaTac, and have fried oysters to help me on my way.
There you go.
And this is just the way life should be lived. But I was fascinated because in the box you sent, several of the oysters had rubber bands around them, as if you hadn't done something, they might have sort of opened up and eaten everything that was inside the box.
Yeah, the we put those on the European flat oysters. Their shelf life doesn't tend to be as long as the other oysters, and so one of the methods of helping them stay fresh is to use a rubber band, because they tend to gape fairly easily, and then you lose your liquor from the oyster, and they also dry out, and it shortens their shelf life. And so we use the rubber bands to keep them closed.
Great, but these are alive, right?
They're alive
when they arrive, and they die when you cut the muscle as you're opening the shell?
Shortly thereafter,
they're on the way down my throat, so they're certainly going to be dead there.
But I work with quite a few restaurants on their oyster programs, and my counsel to the restaurants is to try and have the oysters eaten within 5 minutes off the shucking knife. So they're
ours didn't make it but 30 seconds.
Now this, I was going to say, for Valentine's Day, this is it's been known for centuries to be, it's been thought of as an oyster as an aphrodisiac.
And there is some chemical basis for that, I understand.
Is there?
I think so.
Yes, there is. Oysters are full of zinc. And
oh, that's right, it's zinc. Yeah.
And or not full of zinc, but it's certainly one of the metals that you find in oysters. And
I think they have five times as much zinc as the next food. In nature, so.
And zinc is good for masculine prowess, is that the idea?
Yeah, it has several functions, I think, that go in that direction. But, testosterone is one of them. You need zinc for, testosterone production. But I think there's some kind of equivalent influence on women as well.
Okay. Yeah. And I think...
That's the bumper sticker.
I guess the story helps, too, right?
Yeah, what is it... Eat something and
live longer. Eat oysters, love longer.
Yeah. Eat something, live longer. Eat oysters, love longer.
Yeah, I mean who wants to live if you can't love longer?
Oysters are full of you have the zinc, and then you have a whole panoply of minerals and vitamins and hardly any fats at all. Just good protein, amino acids, and it's just nature's perfect.
But John, who was the brave soul who ate the first lobster? Oyster.
Well, I don't think it was a brave man. I think he was a smart man. He watched the birds pick him up and fly up high and drop him and eat what came out of him. And I think they were so the birds were having such a good time with him that somebody duplicated the feat and found that they had quite a feast in that shell there.
I think that the quote is attributed to Jonathan Swift, who, among other things, wrote Gulliver's Travels.
Right.
I think that's the connection. It's also the story of why you shouldn't eat oysters when there's no R in the month.
Because
the summer months, it took 3 days for oysters to get from Colchester to London, and after 3 days, you wouldn't want to eat them. So I think that's the history behind that. There is a different seasonality, I believe, in your business, though, isn't there? So there are certain times of the year when the oysters are good, and there are other times when they're breeding that they are not perhaps quite as good. Am I recalling that correctly?
That's correct. And the variety of oysters that we grow, actually a lot of them have somewhat different seasons. The European flat oyster and the Olympia oyster tend to reproduce in the late spring, in early summer, whereas your Pacific oyster tends to be more of a summer spawner. And then your Kumamoto, which is actually from originated in southern Japan, is used to much warmer waters, and usually it actually doesn't reproduce in Puget Sound, but it does get somewhat spawny, but that doesn't usually happen until late August or September. And so you've got kind of a variety of timings on when the oysters are reproductive and probably don't want to eat them at that point in time.
So if you're getting a supply from Taylor Shellfish, you'll be sure that the sample that you're getting has oysters that are absolutely in prime condition at the time that you ship them?
At this time of the year, they're all in great condition. So winter months are almost universally good for oysters.
Now, Bill, did you found this company?
Actually, my great-grandfather started in the shellfish business here in the South Puget Sound area around 1890, and the family has been involved with shellfish ever since that time. It's been at different levels at different times, and the current company, Taylor Shellfish, or Taylor United, is actually the parent company, holding company, was formed in the late 60s.
I want to hear more about that, but we need to take a break now. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
Mommy, for my birthday, I want a princess party.
Give your little girl a party she'll remember forever from Sweet Pea Parties.
Mommy, this is wonderful.
Sweet Pea Parties will send out beautiful handmade invitations and then bring decorations, princess gowns to dress up in, fabulous favorite bags, real linen and china, fun games, even a real princess to transform your home into your child's fantasy wonderland.
Do they do parties for boys too?
You bet they do. Safari adventures, pirates and dinosaur themes for the boys, princess, diva, and spa parties for the girls.
Yay! Woohoo!
Our hostesses make your party effort-free. They'll even send out thank you notes featuring each child's personal photo from the party. See for yourself at www.sweet-p-parties.com or call them 412-805-9623. Sweet Pea Parties, 412-805-9623.
Mommy, this was the best party ever.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, with John Rowley and Bill Taylor from Taylor
Shellfish
Farms, plural. Actually, Bill was just telling us about what this company, how it got started, it got started by his grandfather, and it's gone through different phases. Complete your story. Tell us what happens with the company and also all the other products that you sell.
Sure. Actually, it was my great-grandfather that started the company. That was about 1890. The current company, Taylor Shellfish Farms, was founded in the late 60s, and my father and uncle were instrumental in growing the company in the early years. My brother and I came back from college Beach in around 1980 or so, and we'd worked in shellfish all of our life growing up until that time, and then we started working farming and processing shellfish full-time, and company's grown substantially in that last 25, 26 years, and we have we farm about 10,000 acres of tidelands here in Washington State, and have farms in Canada and Mexico and in Fiji. We have a pearl farm. So,
oh, really? A pearl farm?
Yes, a pearl farm in Fiji. So I have a variety of operations going on.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, I want Tahitian pearls.
Yeah, and, well, and the
Fiji is probably similar, huh?
They are. They're the same species of oyster that you have in Tahiti, and so they're a black sea pearl. We farm on those farms. We farm on these areas. We farm a variety of different products, and we have clams. The Manila clam is the single largest product line we have, and we farm that here in Washington. And
why is that so the largest? I mean, because you probably process it too.
We it's processed. Basically, it's sold live, and we've been fortunate to have a lot of good Manila clam bed. Prices are good for that product, and so it's always been it's been profitable for us, and it's just been a good product. And we've worked at learning on how to better farm it on our farms, and have been able to get the yields up per acre, and so quite happy with that. We also farm then the Mediterranean mussel,
which I adore. I just absolutely adore. But that's seasonal, right?
It's best really through the summer and fall, and through the winter, particularly starting about February or so through April, is kind of the time period when it's not the best.
I don't know why it's so hard getting them. I mean, is it a limited production in the world?
Well, at least here in Washington, in the Northwest, it's somewhat limited. It's a similar mussel to the mussel that you find in Spain and apparently in the Mediterranean. And actually, you find it in a number of other this species of mussel in another number of other countries throughout the world too. You're probably going to find limited amount of them here in the United States.
Now, you just were on the break telling us that the Tony Bourdain came and visited your farm, and you did a gooey duck dig?
Yes, we did a gooey duck dig.
I never even envisioned digging them up. I just always see them hanging out.
Sure, because the gooey duck clam, if people don't know, is the largest burrowing clam in the world, and it can get up to as large as 15 pounds. And
how long?
and its neck will be can be up to 3 or 4 feet long, particularly if it's in a nice sandy, soft sandy beach. So these clams can actually be down 3 to 4 feet in the beach, and trying to dig them with the sand caving in around them can be quite a challenge. It's a lot of work when you're just out there digging it with a shovel. We actually, when you're digging them commercially, they actually use a water hose, and you just fluidize.
Oh, okay.
Sediments around the gooey duck and are able to pull it out by its neck. So
what was Tony trying to prove with this?
Just a different, another experience. Just at least watching his show, he's always trying to find some unique experience.
And he likes those weird things.
There's nothing
more weird looking than a gooey duck.
It is. I mean, it really is.
It gets a lot of stares.
Yes.
Now, do you farm these, or are you digging them sort of in places where you know they are, but they're wild?
No, we farm them. We've been farming them for about 15 years, and we actually grow the seed. One of the things that we have is we have a couple of hatcheries, one here in Washington and then one over in Kona. And the hatchery in Washington actually grows, we grow most of our gooey duck, or all of our gooey duck seed in that facility.
How do they mate?
Well, all shellfish they condition. It's certain water temperatures, certain amounts of food will make them, get them to a reproductive stage, and then they will release, they will spawn or release their eggs and sperm into the water. And most of them will release the eggs and sperm into the water, and they'll fertilize in the water column. Some species of oysters, Olympia and the European flat oyster, the female or the male will release its eggs, and the female will take in in
it's in reverse,
sperm,
right.
And the female will take the sperm in and it fertilizes the eggs internally, and then after a couple of weeks releases the eggs. But basically, there's what you have is a stage where the larvae is free-floating, or swimming around for any place between 2 to 4 weeks for most shellfish. And it will be swimming around in the water column and feeding, and then at the end of the 4 weeks, it starts to develop a shell. And at that point in time, it needs to settle down with oysters. It needs to attach to something. And with clams and mussels, they also need to get their way into the beach and start to get into the sand and gravel.
Huh. Now, I'm afraid we will get lost if we don't get this right out there, the website again.
Yes, it's Taylor
because there's so much. Yeah, there's so much to your company that people really need to go onto this website and study it. Go ahead.
It's www.taylorshellfish.com.
Right. We don't use the farms in the official website.
Right.
Right. I'm thrilled to bits that you. How far away do you ship? A long way?
We actually ship pretty much all over the world. We ship into Singapore and into Europe on a regular basis. We ship all throughout the United States, and particularly for anything UPS or FedEx that we ship out to individuals, we ship throughout the United States.
Well, brace yourself, because I'm going to be ordering a lot of stuff, because I love shellfish.
Great.
Yeah. Now, John, what are we going to do with you? I don't know where to start with you.
you're
an icon in this industry, but you're also involved with produce. My first encounter with you was when I read I had actually saved this article long before you and I began emailing. The late Johnny Apple, he wrote a piece for the New York Times about you.
Oh, that was a fun piece. That was one of
Johnny's last.
Isn't
it a shame about him, huh?
That was one of his last pieces.
Yeah, it was really close to when he died. That's true. But it's a fabulous article, and it makes you so interested.
Well, that was great fun to work with him on that. But I got started in oysters in Paris as a young man. I read this passage from Hemingway's The Movable Feast, and I went to the Dome, Le Dome, and
yes.
Ordered my first platter of oysters, and I've just had a romance with them ever since. And I've been lucky enough to been able to incorporate them, into my professional life as well as my personal life. So I've just been having a ball, working with promoting oysters and working with restaurants, setting up oyster bars and organizing oyster festivals and things like that.
Yeah, so. We always meant to go to that one in.
There's one in Wellfleet in Massachusetts, but there's probably one in Washington too, I'll bet.
Well, we have several out here, and then in Chicago, I've worked with there's a big one there. Shaw's Crab House does their annual Royster with the Oyster Festival.
Oh yeah.
The fall, and then the Old Ebbitt Grill in Washington, D.C., we got them going on their two-day oyster riot, which has become quite an institution in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, we used to live there. Yeah, we haven't been for a while. We ought to go to that one.
Yeah, you'll have to let us know about
Make
that
sure
one.
We know when these are going to happen. We can post them on the website and maybe even go to them.
I'll do that.
In fact, I think we posted the Wellfleet one because we did get some information about it, but we can accommodate more information as long as we have it. We can't personally keep track of everything, so if you help us, we can make sure that those announcements go out.
I'll make sure you get the information. We have a little glitch out here with one that we do. It's very popular out here in the Northwest. We do one called the Oyster Olympics.
Yes.
And we just got a cease and desist order. The event's going in its 18th year, and we got a cease and desist order from the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Oh, you're kidding.
They won't let us use the name anymore because it...
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Infringes on the Olympics sponsors.
Yeah, it's like the Olympia Peninsula never existed, huh?
Right.
it was there a long time before the Olympics even happened in Greece for the first time around.
That comes up at the end of March, and so we got to figure out how to do a new name and get the publicity out.
Now, last I talked to you, you had just come back from New York. I returned to the Pacific Northwest from New York, and you went to the Oyster Bar, and you had a great time.
Yeah, it's kind of a ritual when I go to New York anymore. I go to the oyster bar and I sit down with Sandy Ingber, the chef, and Michael Garvey, the general manager there, and we put a big platter of oysters between us and just talk oysters, you know. And it's every time you every platter of oysters has got different there's different things going on, you know. Just the oysters change so much in such
Tell
a short period
that.
Of time, you know. Like if it rains somewhere, you know, the oysters will pick up a different flavor. And,
really?
Different conditions in the water will give you a different flavor. But
what about these pasteurized oysters? What do they do with those? There's some kind of a super pasteurized.
Yes, I can tell you they actually are processed with very high pressure.
Oh.
And what it does, the reason that they've gone to this is to kill the bacteria, particularly in the Gulf of Mexico. There is a nasty bacteria called Vibrio vulnificus, and they've been able to completely neutralize that by using this high-pressure treatment of the oysters. They'll actually get the pressures up to around 30,000 PSI and hold it for several minutes, and it kills all the bacteria that's in the oyster. It does change, at least from my experience, is it does change the flavor some and the texture of the oyster.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that, but I just got a signal that we need to take a break. Can you still hang on?
Sure.
Thanks. Take a break.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Have you been jazzing around yet? It's Sundays from 10 to 12 here on 1550. Get a taste of the latest jazz albums, a concert and club calendar, birthdays, awards, obituaries, and more. Plus featured artist interviews. That's a lot of jazzing. Check it out for yourself. Sponsored in part by Martini's Route 885 Jefferson, Original Recipe Italian Cooking, and Spider Mondanelli's Pittsburgh Jazz Giants, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Jazzing around. Sundays, 10 to 12 here on 1550 The Edge.
Here we are again, and we just have so many things to talk about with John Rowley and Bill Taylor of Taylor Shellfish Farms. That's hard to say, actually, if you've said it a few times. we were talking about what?
You were talking about pasteurized oysters.
Oh, that's right. I wanted to know. I mean, I, How does the oyster react to this? You said it changed the flavor.
It changes the flavor, and it actually kills the oyster.
Well, that's terrible.
And who wants to eat a dead oyster?
No.
If you were underneath that much pressure, you'd be it would probably kill you, too.
Oh, that's just ghastly.
What it does is it kills all the bacteria. Happens is that the oyster actually, it's not preserved, but it extends the shelf life because all the bacteria is gone. So,
oh, that's awful.
But how quickly should you eat them after they've been pasteurized?
They're like any oyster. The sooner you eat them, the better. But they will, because you have killed the bacteria, they will keep longer.
Now, you don't deal with things like soft-shell crabs, though, do you?
We don't. We don't have soft-shell crabs in this part of the U.S., just in the Gulf Coast and the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's a Dungeness crab country here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's for sure. That's wonderful stuff,
too.
We
do sell Dungeness crab.
Oh, you do? Just the meat?
Not a large seller of it, but we do sell some Dungeness crab.
I mean, like, not live and not whole?
A good portion of it is sold live.
Really?
We'll have people come. We'll buy it from the fishermen, and then a number of wholesalers will come and pick it up and then ship it via truck. They'll keep them in live tanks and ship them to San Francisco and California.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I could go on and on about. There's so much to say about shellfish. I'm fascinated with that. Do you know, perchance, what this is? It's not shellfish, but I don't think. What it is that they sell as espardenya in Spain, I think.
John, do you know? I'm not familiar with it.
Espardenya.
Espardenya. I think it's sea cucumber, but they deny that because they charge a lot of money for it.
I don't know the word.
Okay, it's some part of the stomach of
a sea
creature or something. It's some part of what we think is a sea cucumber. What happened apparently was that all the fishermen in this particular area, they're caught off the coast of the Costa Brava near Barcelona, and apparently somebody spotted them. The fishermen would harvest the sea cucumbers, catch them, whatever you like to call it, and they would cut them up, and they would only take out this particular part of the sea cucumber, and then they would throw the rest of it away.
Oh, that must be the stomach. I don't know what you'd call it, but there's a lining inside of the sea cucumber which tastes, very much like a sweet clam if you strip it out.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
That's exactly what it is. It's very expensive, and I think if everybody knew what it really was, they wouldn't pay the money.
I have a feeling we have a caller on the line.
Yeah.
We do?
Oh, we do.
Hello, Natalie.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. Well,
goodness.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're glad that you caught up with us before the show is over. On the other line are a couple of shellfish guys from the Pacific Northwest.
Interesting, fascinating
but
people.
But there's a little bit of shellfish in the Atlantic Southeast that's probably going to appear during your wonderful Charleston.
Indeed.
And
so,
Natalie, this
wild American shrimp. And, I think it's in our part of the country, we figure as long as it's homegrown, it's wonderful. Wild American shrimp is what we're going to be featuring at our festival.
I can hardly wait.
Now, let's
introduce, make sure that Natalie is introduced properly to John Raleigh and Bill Taylor of Taylor Shellfish Farms.
Hello.
Hello.
And this is Natalie Dupre has this extensive, very impressive resume. She's done just about everything, won all kinds of awards for it, and she's president of this festival, the Charleston Festival.
Charleston Food and Wine Festival, and it'll be the first weekend in March. It's called charlestonfoodandwine.com, and I'm awfully glad to meet you. Why don't you come?
Well, we are coming.
One thing we'd like to learn from you is how to put on a proper oyster roast.
Well, we'll show you that. We'll show you that, although I know you have your own oysters. You must feel very proprietary about that yourself.
But we don't have that tradition of oyster roast out here like you folks do there, and we want to learn how to do that.
Oh, well, there is a very good article actually about how to do it in general in our local paper today in the business section in the Post and Courier. But my favorite way, if you wanted to know, is to get a sheet of metal and put a fire underneath it and then just throw it on if you're doing it yourself. And in fact, my first book, New Southern Cooking, I had how to do an oyster roast.
She's written 9 books.
Cool. Yeah, actually, number 10 just came out, and it's...
I've certainly seen her name around.
Yeah, and it's called Shrimp and Grits, so...
Right, we don't have that book. Why don't we have that book?
I don't know. We'll send it to you immediately.
Then we'll have it. Stacy has all our information, but Natalie, imagine that you've got just about a long elevator ride. Tell our listeners about the Charleston Food and Wine Festival in person, because we haven't been. This is the second year of the event. We are going to be there. We're looking forward to it. But fire away about the festival.
Well, Charleston is a very beautiful walking town. So in addition to all sorts of celebrities, which you can find out about at our website, from Tyler Florence to that beautiful-eyed Tom Colicchio, who does such a wonderful job,
yes.
And I guess it's Top Chef. We have Dine Around. We'll have Dine Around, so people can walk from their hotels to our beautiful restaurants and have Dine Around. They can have dinner in a penthouse overlooking the sea. They can get into some of these beautiful old homes for a private cocktail party. And then in the middle of the city, we're a walking city, so right smack dab in the middle of our city is going to be the tent, so that we haven't had rain in 100 years, according to the almanac, but we are still, you know, being sure. But we will have these wonderful tents full of competitions and lovely food from the restaurants and fabulous chefs giving demonstrations. And then on Friday, we're going to have a trade day where wonderful people like George Lang will be coming and Mimi Sheridan talking about the rise of American food.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So, do you want to give us a detail?
It's charlestonfoodandwine.com. March 1st through 4th, and you can go right to the website and find everything else about it, or if you would like the phone number, I will give that to you as well.
Fire away, Natalie.
All right. Wait a second, I'm not the woman I want to be today. I have sort of a cold, I'm sorry.
No, so does Peter. you get together.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
Oh, you have one too?
I don't, Peter does.
I do, I've been accused by the producer of sniffling into the microphone all day.
Oh, well, I know. It's 843-557-4077.
Let me do this, Natalie. I don't mean to interrupt, but the Charleston Food and Wine, the and is spelled out, A-N-D.
Right,
and
wine.
And there's no punctuation.
Com.
So it's charlestonfoodandwine.com.
And it's much the best way to reach us.
Now, are you talking about wild shrimp?
I was talking about wild American shrimp, yes. But
they're farm-raised, or they're not?
No, not. I wasn't talking about farm-raised shrimp.
They're wild. Oh, that's great.
We call them wild, but they're, you know, because they're caught out in the ocean.
But they're not farmed, right?
But they're not farmed. Mm-mm. Yeah. They're caught right off of our coast.
So, I mean, where, like, John and Bill, where do you guys stand on this farmed versus wild?
Well, at least having farmed shellfish all my life, I see farmed seafood as something that's going to be an important thing as world fisheries decline. And I love wild seafood, but I think just to meet the increasing demand for seafood, you're going to see an increase in farmed seafood in the next.
Well, I know we're going to see an
future.
Increase. Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of
it's cheaper to raise as well, I think, than to catch.
Yeah, they're cultivated mollusks. They're Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is a seafood watch. They've rated them as in their green zone as being a sustainable.
Yeah, I read that. That's very good, because that's sort of the ultimate source of all this, isn't
right.
it? Right. Yeah.
And I certainly did not. I have to apologize and sort of backtrack. I didn't know you were on the line when I came blasting in.
No, you're fine.
You're fine, Nancy. We were just worried.
We wish we could talk these guys into coming to the festival.
Well, yes, we could have a very good debate if you came to the festival.
Yeah.
Now, don't you do oysters in South Carolina, too?
Oh, yes, that's what I thought you were talking about. We are doing an oyster roast as well during our festival.
Oh, great. We had some of Chef Bobby Carter from the Peninsula Grill. We had his fabulous oyster stew with grits when we were down there.
Oh, yes. He's one of our premier chefs here. Peninsula Grill is one of our top restaurants, and it will also be part of our dine around.
Oh, go! We did a back-to-back, the the Charleston Grill and the Peninsula Grill and then wrote a piece on it. It's on our website.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I'll have to look for it
on your website because those are two of our top restaurants. In fact, I am awfully glad I don't have to choose for the dine around because I'm going to both. I'm going to do a tour of all of the restaurants on the dine around and say hello to everyone so I don't have to choose. Because I don't know how anybody would.
Yeah. Well, now here we are. We have two minutes left.
Yeah, hold on a second. There's something important that I need to get in here because the original program for the Food and Wine Festival had a set of restaurants that were involved in the dine around, and we just got a new list from Stacy, and the restaurants are different. I'm assuming that possibly the celebrity chefs are different as well, but I don't know. Now, is that information on the website?
And all of the up-to-date information is on the website. Probably the only difference is that we have gotten more restaurants involved because the demand was so great and because so many of the chefs wanted to participate this year. Last year being our first, some of them were concerned about closing their restaurants for the event.
Right.
But this year they all are knocking on our door, and so we wanted to feature as many of our good restaurants as we could.
Well, we plopped our name down for the Woodlands. Because we know Chef Tara
love
King.
That.
Yeah, we've already been. We love it.
And Anne's getting ready to shoot me, so she needs the last. Well,
exactly.
You get the last word then.
The last word actually goes to our guests. John, what can you say in 30 seconds?
Well, this is oyster season. We got Valentine's Day coming up, and
order by tomorrow, everybody.
Tomorrow.
February 12th, yes.
Well.
So, and anyhow, order that for Valentine's Day.
That's it, exactly. By all means, order oysters for Valentine's Day. They're the oyster, this is the season of an aphrodisiacs.
It is.
And then followed on by giving your loved one a ticket to the Charleston Food and Wine Festival.
There we go.
So, Bill, I love your product. And it was great talking to you. And as I said before, I'm just going to have to figure out how you guys can come back. Would you just give us an excuse, something you're doing that we can talk about, and we'll do this again.
Great.
Okay.
And Natalie, we'll see you March 1st in Charleston.
Thank you. I'll see you then.
Oh, see, here comes the music. That's why I was trying to get you.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I know.
Fermi La Bouche.
I thought what I was doing was important too. So.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much.
So here we are, fighting our way off the show until next week.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Jazzin' Around with David Jay is next on The Edge, AM 1550.